Access 7. This is your 14 module. You just do a bit of recap. Okay, what we have covered so far in this chapter 7, if you all recall, that Lord Krishna was introducing to us what is Ishvara Swarupa. Ishvara Swarupa means what is the very nature of God. As you recall, in the first 6 chapters, Krishna spoke about Jiva Swarupa, that is our own individual nature. So now in the middle 6 chapters, he is going to talk to us about Ishvara Swarupa, what is the very nature of God. And in this chapter 7, in this verses number 4 and 5, Krishna said that he has got 2 natures. The word Prakriti was used. The word Prakriti means nature. So God said, I have 2 nature. And what are the 2 nature? You all recall? Para Prakriti, which is higher nature, and Apara Prakriti, which is lower nature. So there is 1 Para Prakriti plus 1 Apara Prakriti. And what happens to the next stage, like this same Lord, which is made of the 2 principles, he says this Para and Apara become the whole world, become the whole creation. And how does that happen? In the next stage, the 1 Para Prakriti, which is consciousness, the difference between Para Prakriti and Apara is higher nature is consciousness, lower nature is matter, which has got no life in it. So what is Lord? Lord is 1 higher nature plus lower nature, and this combination becomes the entire creation. So in the second stage, the Para Prakriti, the higher nature of God, remains as 1. What happens to the lower nature? Before it becomes many, what happens at the second stage? Just like the seed, before it becomes a full-fledged tree, it becomes a plant or a seedling. So the lower nature of God becomes expands into 8-fold Prakriti. That is what he said in verse number 4. He said, my lower nature from 1 becomes 8. And what is that 8-fold Prakriti? It consists of the 5 elements: ether, air, fire, water, earth, plus mind, intellect and ego. So the lower Prakriti transforms itself into 8 components. What happens to the higher Prakriti? Remains as 1. So now at the second stage, you have 1 plus 8, which is again nothing but Ishvara, the very nature of God. Now at the third stage, that 1 consciousness remains as 1, the higher Prakriti. The lower Prakriti, which was made of 8 components, now becomes what? What happens to the 8-fold Prakriti now? It manifests as what? Everything in creation. It is a multitude of creation. Insects, plants, fishes, humans, you name it, everything in creation comes from this 8-fold Prakriti. What happens to the higher Prakriti? It remains as 1. So there is only 1 consciousness, higher Prakriti, but the lower Prakriti goes through various transformations. Now, this is how God says, now I am in the world. The very nature of God, His higher and lower nature, is available for us in this world. So what does He say in verse 6? He says, this is on page 137, all of you have this book, chapter 7, verse 6. He says, know that all beings, this whole creation, evolved from this 2-fold Prakriti, the higher and the lower Prakriti. And God says, I am the origin of the entire creation, and again it be dissolves. So everything comes from God, is supported by God, and upon dissolution goes back again to God. And he gave a beautiful example in verse number 7 using the Sutre Manigana Iva. The sutra which is the thread, Manigana is the pearls. Just like how the pearls are supported by one string, the pearls can be of different shapes and sizes and colors, just like this whole manifested universe, but the string is only one. Without the string, the entire universe will disintegrate. So Lord says, I support the entire creation with my higher prakriti. Just like example, we can think of how without gold there can be no ornaments. All ornaments are supported by the presence of gold. All waves are supported by the presence of ocean, etc., etc. So now we know that God is available in this world, in this creation, in everything in creation, his lower and higher nature. And then in verses 8, 9, 10 and 11, he gave us 12 samples or examples of how to recognize this higher and lower nature of God. So some of the examples that he gave us is, he said, I am the taste in water. So what is water? Higher or lower nature? Lower nature. And what is the higher nature? The very taste or the nourishment of the water. So the nourishment of the water is the higher nature of Lord. The water itself is the lower nature of God. And then he gave also another example in verse number 9. I am the pure fragrance in earth. Earth being the lower nature and fragrance being the higher nature of God. Now, all this, there were 12 examples given there up to verse number 11. Now the question comes to us is this. Therefore, if Lord is available in this world as a lower and higher nature, what is the lower nature of God? How do we worship the lower nature of God? In form. The lower nature of God is tangible. It has got form. It has got shape. It has got size. It has got color. So we can worship the lower nature. When I say lower, it does not mean inferior. It is just to separate it from the higher nature. It is not that one is inferior or superior. But lower nature means that which has form, color, size, etc. That we can offer worship to in Shiva form, Krishna form, Ganesha form, Devi form, whatever form, which you can offer flowers, you can offer water, you can offer fruits, you can sing bhajans to. That is the known as the lower form of God. And then what is the higher form of God? The pure consciousness, which is invisible, which is eternal, which is not subject to change, which has got no attributes, it has got no shape, no size, no color, etc. So therefore, that is also a form that we can worship also. And that's why this chapter is called Jnana Vijnana Yoga. Jnana means knowledge of the form of God. When we want to worship, we want to know the form of God, that is called Jnanam, that is knowledge. It is something we can directly experience. But the higher form of God, higher nature of God, the unmanifest, is called Vijnanam, because it is something our senses cannot experience. It is something even our mind finds it difficult to think about, but it is something that our intellect can understand, can comprehend. So it requires a very subtle intellect, it requires a very subtle mind to understand the higher nature of God. That's why that is called Vijnanam. That requires wisdom. Jnanam is knowledge. Vijnanam is wisdom. So both Krishna says, if you have Jnanam and you have Vijnanam, that means what? What does it mean? If you have both Jnanam and Vijnanam, what does it mean?
You're one with me.
if you have jnanam and vijnanam, that means you know both the lower nature of God and the higher nature of God. That means you know God in totality. That's what he told Arjuna at the beginning of chapter 7. I'm going to give you jnanam, I'm going to give you vijnanam, knowing which you will know me in full. You will know me as the form and worship, and you will also know me as the formless. Okay. Now the question is, if God is available in both form and formless here, right here in this creation. Now if we take our body, which is the lower aspect of God, which is the lower prakriti of God? Which is the lower aspect of God? Since we have also been created from his lower prakriti, which is the lower prakriti in us? The body, the senses, the mind, the intellect, because all are made from matter. So what is the higher nature of God in us? How do you know? How do you know which is your higher nature? Ear is matter, right? But what gives you that consciousness to hear? That is the higher nature within you. Eye is matter. Eye by itself cannot see unless there is the higher consciousness in us that gives us the capacity to see. So the very knower, that which you are seeing, that which you are hearing, that which is giving you the power to hear, to see, to feel, to touch, to taste, that is the very higher consciousness which is within us. So that we can understand to separate which is my lower nature and which is my higher nature. The higher nature is the experiencer. The lower nature is what is experienced. Okay? Now, the question is, if God is available in his both lower and higher nature, why is it that we cannot come to this higher nature? Most of us worship and know God and love God through his lower nature. Why is it that we cannot come to the higher nature? And this Krishna has explained the problems what we are facing to come to the higher nature in verses 12 and 13 and 14. So what is the problem? In verse number 12, he explained to us that in this lower nature, there are the three gunas. The higher nature does not have any gunas. It is pure consciousness. The lower nature, which is made of matter, mind, intellect, ego, has got the three gunas: sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. Now, what happens as a result of this gunas, which is in the lower nature? What is the result of the three gunas, which is in the lower nature? This is what makes the whole creation colorful, vibrant, different. Whereas the consciousness remains one, the entire creation that we experience, in fact, all of us are different shapes, size, colors. Even the whole creation has got so much of vibrancy, color, etc. Now, also, what happens therefore, we are totally engrossed in this lower nature. This is what is called in our scriptures as Maya. That which actually is not there. Why? Why do we say Maya is actually not there? Maya is that which does not exist. Why do we call it illusion? It is constantly subject to change. It is subject to arrival and departure. It is not stable. It is constantly subject to change. But our problem is we are constantly attracted to that which has got change, which has got color, which has got shape, which has got size. So all our attention is focused on this world, including this body. We are so engrossed with this body. So because of these gunas which add flavor and color to the lower prakriti, we are constantly attracted to this lower nature, which is the world also. Now, that's why in the Puranas also there are beautiful stories, if you remember, especially the churning of the ocean. So when the Devas and the Asuras were churning the ocean, what were they interested in? The nectar, right? That is what they wanted. The main purpose of cooperating together was to churn the ocean and get the nectar, which is the symbol of eternal life. But in the process of churning, before the nectar came out, what came out before that? Poison also came. What else? So many other attractive things also came, right? One of them was Amma, more attractive than Lakshmi. Mohini. Right or not? And then what happened to the Asuras? They started running after Mohini. So what did they miss? The nectar. So this is an allegorical explanation to us that we are also running after Mohini. But what are we missing? The immortal nectar, the higher prakriti of Lord we are missing. What we are running after is the changing, attractive, lower prakriti. So this is what Krishna said now in verse number 12 and 13 also, which we looked at the last time. So here he says, Ebhi tribhir gunamayir bhavir idam sarvam jagat mohitam. Sarvam idam sarvam jagat, this whole world, sarvam idam jagat, mohitam, is deluded. By what? By Ebhi, by these three. Tribhir means three. Gunamayir, this very creation which has the three gunas in it, this is what is deluding all of us. This is what is attracting us, pulling us away towards the world. Because this para prakriti has got the three gunas, we are constantly chasing after this name, fame, power, position, money, etc. Our constant attention is focused on this lower aspect of the world, which is attracting us by the three gunas. And therefore, what happens? We become mohitam. Mohitam means what? Deluded. What are we deluded about? We don't have the power of discrimination to stop and think about the higher nature of God. So how many of us are really interested to stand back, analyze what we are chasing after? It is not wrong to run after the world, but what is the problem? No, it's not wrong to run after the world. It is temporary, but it's okay to run after the world. We need that entertainment. We need to do our work. But what is the problem? We devote all our time to only that aspect of the world, whereas we neglect the spiritual growth of our lives. So there has to be a balance in our life to understand, I have to do my duty. I have to also serve the world. I have to take care of myself, but at the same time I owe myself that for the spiritual growth also. So now, because of the three gunas, we are deluded. And thus Krishna says here also, Mam Evya Param Avyayam Na Abhi Janati. Na jana, Abhi Na Janati means that's why people do not know, or they do not come to my distinct or higher nature, because they are so engrossed, they are so busy in running after this colorful world also. Now, the question is, so what if I do not know about para prakriti? What's the big deal? In fact, if I am engrossed in this world, apara prakriti, isn't it wonderful? Why you all come for Gita class? Isn't it good to run after apara prakriti? Be engrossed in the world? So what if you don't come to para prakriti? You are not asking, I have to ask you. And because why? Apara prakriti can provide for all our needs, isn't it? My food, my shelter, my clothing, my entertainment, everything can be provided by apara prakriti. So why should I waste my precious time in going for para prakriti? I have to understand this, otherwise why should I pursue? If you tell anybody, come for Gita classes and pursue para prakriti, you say, why are you wasting my time? I am happy doing what I am. So we must understand, why are we pursuing para prakriti? For what reason? Why should we pursue para prakriti?
Just seeking for permanent happiness. Para is just temporary.
Yes, we are seeking for permanent happiness. What we are seeking for is basically happiness. And what type of happiness all of us seeking for is permanent happiness, permanent security, permanent peace of mind. This is what we are really seeking. And if you look at chapter 2, verse 66, just briefly go back to chapter 2, verse 66. That's on page 54. There, Krishna said, chapter 2, verse 66, page 54. He said, for that person who doesn't have wisdom, that spiritual wisdom, that intellectual capacity to think clearly, and who does not have bhavana, bhavana means has devotion or love to God, such a person who doesn't have both of these, where will he be seeking his happiness, security and fulfillment? In the world. And the world is constantly fleeting, is constantly changing, it is constantly subject to arrival and departure. Thus, for such a person, Krishna says, devoid of this wisdom and the devotion to God, a man can have no peace. Why? Because the mind is constantly hankering for something in the world, for quick returns, quick desires, satisfying all kinds of selfish desires. There can be no peace of mind for such a person. And when a person does not have peace of mind here is said as to be shanti. If your mind can never be at peace, then Krishna says, how can that person have any happiness? So ultimately that happiness that you seek cannot come from the apara prakriti. There is only one place that can give you absolute maximum happiness, and that is from para prakriti. So we should understand this. If we are seeking that absolute bliss, it can only come from one, and that is from knowing the para prakriti. Therefore, here, even in Bhaja Govindam, that's why Adi Shankaracharya wrote so beautifully. He said, don't take pride in your youth. Don't take pride in your beauty. Don't take pride in your friends. I got such fantastic friends. I got such beautiful face. I am so young. Why? Because everything will leave you one day. So don't be attached to it. Don't take pride in it. It's very dangerous. Enjoy it while you can, but don't be attached to it. And that's why Krishna says these ignorant people as mohitam, he calls them as deluded people. Why are they deluded? Why do you call these people deluded? He uses a very strong word. Mohitam in this chapter 7, verse number 13. Mohitam na abhijanati. They do not know me because they are deluded, and thus they do not know me. Why do you call such people deluded? What are they deluded about?
Right. You think that happiness is coming from the upper of the
world. Right. Delusion is when you expect permanence from the impermanent. Delusion is when you expect security from that which itself is not secure. Delusion is when you expect changelessness from the very thing that is subject to change. Isn't that delusion? So you are totally deluded about the world. What you are thinking about the world, I love you, this person will always love me. True or not? Nobody wants to say anything. Everybody is scared. This person will always be around for me. This money will always be there. My youth will always be there. My possessions will always be there. So who is speaking out of delusion? So this is why he calls them mohita, deluded people. Now, of course, first he gives us the bad news, later he's going to tell us how to get out of this delusion. So now in verse 14, he gives us the good news, how to get out of this delusion. So he says now in verse 14, see, he calls it gunamayi. These three gunas which are in the lower part of prakriti, in the lower prakriti, they are gunamayi. They are God's creation. These three gunas have been put into the lower prakriti by God Himself. So He says, and they are Devi, they are His divine Maya. It is His divine Maya that He has put these three gunas into the lower prakriti. Now, the question is, how does it delude us? We have to understand this. And in one of these writings, Ramakrishna Paramahansa, it is called the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna gives a beautiful explanation about this ego. He says the ego is of two types. One he calls as the ripe ego, like a fruit, a ripe ego. And the other is the unripe or green ego. So think of the ego as a mango. The unripe mango ego is green color. And then you have the ripe ego. Now what's the difference? The ripe ego is the one that has been burnt by the fire of knowledge, by the fire of wisdom. When the wisdom dawns in us, this ego is burnt in the fire of knowledge. It is illumined by divine knowledge and it knows very clearly what that this body, these relatives, these possessions, this world is totally temporary, is totally unreal. It is fleeting. So if I am seeking happiness, this ego will have a loving, direct relationship with God. That is what we call a right ego, that is awakened, that has come to the knowledge, a perfect knowledge about this world and in which direction I should seek my happiness, my peace of mind, my security. In contrast, the unripened ego, which is what we call the soul which is bound, it identifies with this body, it identifies with the relatives, with the possessions, with the world, and as a result, it loses itself in seeking peace, happiness and security in this world. So what happens? Even when this unripened ego worships God, what does it seek? More worldly comforts, more worldly returns. And generally there are six things that is said in our scriptures that nourish this ego, that make us proud and make us more and more attached to this world, that keep on nourishing our ego. And then what happens when this ego is nourished with these six things? Youth, beauty, money, education, ethnic origin and social status. These are the six things that feed the ego. And the more they feed the ego, the more we lose our relationship or that contact with God. So when we have prosperity, good health, high education, what should our attitude be? Let's say we have everything. We have money, we got high education, we got excellent social status, we have everything. What should be our attitude be? Instead of feeling proud and arrogant, we thank God for His blessings. So thus, this Maya has everything for us to enjoy. But we should remain humble. We should not get carried away with it. Understand? Yes. Sorry? Okay. Youth, beauty, money, education, ethnic origin, and social status. Okay. So Maya has everything for us to enjoy, but we should not get carried away. So here Krishna says, he gives us this warning here also. If you look at the verse 14 in the second line, Durat Yaya, this Maya, this grand illusion has got many attractions. It is so powerful, it's such a deluding principle that it is not easy to overcome it. It is not easy to cross over it. And we all know this. Every day we get up in the morning, we are totally engrossed in this Maya until we go to sleep at night. It is so attractive. It is totally occupies our time and attention. So that's why Krishna says here, Duratyaya. It's not telling us that it cannot be crossed, but you have to be very alert that you don't get lost in it. So why? Because it consists of these three gunas, guna mayi. And all the three gunas, sattvic guna, rajasic guna, tamasic guna, all have their powers to attract us. Later on, when we come to chapter 14, which is the full chapter explaining the gunas, we will understand the gunas more in detail. But for time being, let us understand that gunas have this attractive nature to pull our attention and our time away. So now, what is the origin here? Krishna says the origin of all this is my own creation. It is God's own creation. So obviously the next question would be, why did God put this and delude all of us? Because they always say this world is a play or by God, you know, it is Maya, it's a drama. No, why did he do all this? Why not just don't have the Maya there and then we can straight away achieve him? No need to waste our time coming for Gita classes every Saturday. Isn't it? Why go and put these three gunas and make the world so attractive that we are totally lost and confused and engrossed in this world? There must be a purpose. Because God doesn't simply create anything. There must be a purpose. So what is the purpose of this world with the Maya, with the gunas in it? What is the purpose? Everybody feeling sleepy today. We too long a break. Not for me, for you all. Okay, I'm just kidding. No, see, the world is there to serve a purpose. Because we have our karmas, we come with the karmas. So the world is an opportunity for us to discharge our karmas. It is for us to do service, to understand how to live a dharmic life. So the world itself has a purpose. We should understand what is the purpose of this world. How can I lead the dharmic life? Don't get attached to this world and at the same time keep my mind focused on God. The world has its purpose. God also has his purpose. We have a destination that is God. The world is a means for us to reach God. So the problem is not with the world. The problem is with our misunderstanding of the world. We take the world for pleasure, for seeking pleasure, for entertainment, but the world has not been designed for that. The world has been designed, if you recall in chapter 3, Krishna said what? Why was the world created? You remember in chapter 3, he told us, Prajapati created the world, with what command did he give to the human beings? Sacrifice, live a life of yajna. When you live a life of yajna, you will reach God. It is our misunderstanding of the world, misinterpretation of the world, that we have gone off the path of dharma. So we are suffering not because of God has made this world attractive, because we fail to understand what is the purpose of the goal of life, of human life. So here the question is, how do we overcome this? So Krishna here gives us the solution, that you can cross over this Maya, and there is only one possible way to cross over this Maya, and that is ye mam eva prapadyante. Ye, those who can cross over Maya, there is only one way. Prapadyante means to take total refuge in God. Totally take refuge in God. That is the only solution for the devotees to surrender in me, surrender to me, take shelter in me, humbly, totally surrender. Now, what happens when we, of course, we have to understand this word surrender, but in one simple word, it means when you worship God, when you have love for God. We start with that. We start with love for God. You may not have any knowledge about God. You may not have all this in-depth knowledge. But what he's telling you here, at least start with worship. That's why these middle six chapters are concentrating on one thing. The first six chapters, what was the sadhana which was emphasized? Karma Yoga, the path of selfless action. In the middle six chapters, which is the sadhana? Upasana. Upasana means what? Worship. We'll understand what is this word upasana. That means by having total devotion to God. Now, what happens when we have this single-pointed devotion to God? What happens? Look at chapter 10, verse 10, page 184. When you have that worship, that love, that devotion for God through your prayers, through going to temples, through singing bhajans, through offering flowers, whatever you do, build up that relationship, that love for God, single-minded devotion. What happens? He says, chapter 10, verse 10, page 184, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give that buddhi yoga, dadami buddhi yogam. I will give you that yoga of understanding. So we all start with that love and that worship for God. Then it becomes God's responsibility to take us to a more higher level, to open up this opportunity for us to get this knowledge, to get the thirst for knowledge, and to get that opportunity for knowledge. So first we must show that we are interested, we have love for God, we want to attain, we want to be one with God, then only that right knowledge will be made available and accessible to us also.
When you say God here, you mean both apara and para?
Yes, to know both. So we worship the apara and eventually we come to the para with knowledge, right? So first of all, we have to start with apara because we have no knowledge at all about para. So how do we come to apara? Through our worship. And then Krishna says, tadami buddhi yogam. I will give you that yoga of understanding. I will make available to you the right conducive environment, the right scriptures, the right teacher, the right interest also to acquire that knowledge. So all of you have come here. Why? Because of your past devotion to God. That is the punyam that you have built up. It can be in this life, it also can be in previous lives. The punyam that you have built up because of your devotion and love for God will eventually ignite that thirst in knowledge for you and cause you to seek this knowledge also. So you can congratulate yourself that you have that much of punyam that is also driving you constantly. Not everybody is fortunate enough to have this. So Krishna says that that is the secret to come to Him, to worship Him. Now here again, I must qualify this because sometimes there's a lot of controversy when we talk about Krishna says, worship me, come to me. Is it the Krishna me? What about worshipping Shiva, worshipping Ganesha? Is it just exclusively worshipping Krishna? No. When Krishna says me here, please understand me is not the Krishna form. Krishna is talking about me, the absolute Brahman. That is what he means by me. So the form is only a means to the higher Lord. Whichever form you choose to worship depends on your own individual nature. Okay, so he says, those who take refuge in me, taranti, they will easily cross over this maya, this delusion. Now, we come to the important question of understanding. This surrender to God, prapadyante, this devotion to God, the common word normally used is bhakti, right? Many people use this word bhakti. But Bhagavad Gita has got a different definition for bhakti. For worship, the word used here is upasana, which comes from two words, upa and asana. Asana means to sit. Upa is near. To sit near meaning what? Bringing your mind near to God. That is what we call worship. That which you chant mantras, you go to temple, you sing bhajans, all that is called upasana. Worship, which means bringing your mind as close as possible to God. Then what is bhakti? Bhakti as defined by Bhagavad Gita has got three levels. Okay? Now, at the very initial level of bhakti, what we call as bhakti, what Bhagavad Gita defines as bhakti, you use the Lord for worldly ends. We worship God, but that is the initial level of bhakti whereby I worship God to achieve worldly ends. And that type of bhakti in our scriptures is referred to as manda bhakti, M-A-N-D-A, manda bhakti. It is a very initial, very starting stage of bhakti whereby I seek karma, I seek desires, I seek artha, I seek possessions, and I also seek dharma. Dharma means I want to attain heaven, I want good punyam in my next life, so I worship God. Oh God, I am doing this, I am doing charity, I am doing this in order to get a better birth. Okay? So dharma, karma, artha, I worship God, but my goal is what? Worldly ends. That is the initial level called manda bhakti. Now, what the Bhagavad Gita says basically, then you have to progress to the next stage, which is called madhyama bhakti, M-A-D-H-Y-A-M-A, middle level bhakti, madhyama. What is madhyama bhakti? Where God is no more the means for early, for worldly ends, but now I worship God for attaining God. Where God becomes my goal now. My worship is to attain God. So God is the end itself. Now why would you come to this kind of worship? What is the reason you would progress from manda bhakti to madhyama bhakti?
Love.
Huh?
Love.
Love for God. What else? Correct. When you come to the understanding that no matter how much I keep on asking for God, I want proton car, then I'm not happy, then I ask for Honda, then I'm not happy, ask for Mercedes, then I'm not happy, ask for Rolls Royce, then I'm not happy, ask for. So you keep on asking and asking and asking, and the more you ask, the more He gives, you still find what? You're still not happy. Right? I thought I'm a bachelor, I get married, it will remove all my problems. So I got married. I asked God for a nice spouse. Then after that I got a spouse. Then I thought only if I have children it will remove all my problems. Then I asked God for children. Then children came. Then what happened? Huh? Then I asked God, can you please bless my children so they will pass in their exams. And then we keep on praying and praying and praying, and finally you end up with grandchildren, and it goes on and on and on. So only until we come to the realization that no matter how much I keep asking God, I know at the end of the day I'll never be happy. So what do? I seek a higher goal. Now I don't worship God for worldly ends, I worship God to attain God. Madhyama Bhakti. And then, that is not enough, then you have to come to the final level called Uttama Bhakti, where you come to the understanding. What is that understanding in Uttama Bhakti?
God
and I are one. God is neither the means to the world, God is neither the end, God and me are but one. My individual nature, Atman, and God's individual nature, Brahman, are just one entity. So that is called Uttama Bhakti. And this is where we have to come. So bhakti is at three levels, you must understand. Bhakti is not just going to temple, singing bhajans, offering flowers. Bhakti, we will understand, is at three levels. In fact, in chapter 12, he will break bhakti up into, chapter 12 itself is called Bhakti Yoga. He will define five levels of bhakti, how we can progress from the first to the fifth level of bhakti. So we have to understand this. Bhakti, devotion to God, keeps on increasing. Now, the more and more the devotion to Lord keeps on increasing, we must understand two other qualities will also come in. The more devotion you have to God, the more love you have for God, two other qualities automatically come in. What are the qualities? One quality is called Vairagya. Vairagya means the more you go towards God, the more your love for God, you have an automatic detachment towards the world. You find distaste for activities that you used to get engrossed in before. Like going for parties, going for movies, which used to attract you and pull you there. Now you find that as you go towards God, it is not by force. Please understand. Vairagyam is not saying that I don't want to do this because I shouldn't do it. No. It has to come naturally. So that natural devotion for love for God, you will find automatically that your tastes, your interests, the type of people you mix with, places where you like to go which attract you are totally different than what you have been doing before. That is called Vairagya. Natural detachment from worldly activities. The books that you read, the type of people that you mix with, if you hear there is a spiritual talk going on, you're automatically attracted to that. So that is called Vairagya. That is a byproduct of your devotion to God. The second byproduct of your devotion to God is what we discussed just now in chapter 10, verse 10, which was Jnanam. The thirst for knowledge will automatically arise in you. So that's why Krishna says, you just have devotion to me. The more devotion you have to me, the more Vairagya you will develop, the more the thirst for knowledge will develop in you. And you will progress on the spiritual path also. So that is the beauty of devotion to Lord. Yes. You don't go for, sorry, bhajans?
Parties.
Parties, you go for spiritual talk, okay.
So, let's say you like balance out, you also go for parties, then you also go for spiritual talk?
No, there's nothing wrong. What I'm saying is that you don't find an attraction. Right? But you may want to go because of obligation. Supposing it's a family event, right? Or your close friend has invited you. You go, but there's not, like last time you had the thirst to run for it. So you may go out of obligation, you may go out of to fulfill certain family responsibilities, there's nothing wrong. But all the while you'll find that actually your mind is attracted somewhere else. And if you had that option on that day to choose between a spiritual talk and a party, I would choose party. Which one would you choose? See, so you will be naturally attracted to that, right? So it is from the heart. It has got to come from the heart. But yes, what you're saying is right. I'm not saying that totally means pull away from the world. We have certain obligation. We have certain response. We do that. But that attraction is no more there. It doesn't pull you anymore, right? So that is the nature of bhakti. That's why we have all these Puranas. Ved Vyasa, although he wrote the Bhagavad Gita, that to aim for the highest, that is to reach Brahman, he also wrote the Brahma Sutras, which is a very deep 550 verses scripture which talks about Brahman also. I wouldn't advise you to read it because I also have given up reading it. It's very deep. So I'm not discouraging you, but just to let you know, these are the type of texts that Ved Vyasa wrote. But at the same time, what did he write? The Puranas. Why did he write the Puranas? The Puranas have got nothing to do with knowledge. There is Vishnu Purana, there is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a Purana about Krishna, there is Devi Puranas, there is Kanda Purana. Why did he write the Puranas about the different Devas? which has got no knowledge about Brahman. It just talks about the different devas, all their activities, stories about devas. Why? Right.
What you get from it.
Right.
The meaning
of the story. So what was his aim for writing the Puranas? We get that attraction to a form of God, to build up the devotion and the love to God. For example, if you love Krishna, you will read the Srimad Bhagavatam. You will read about all his stories, all his glories, all his pastimes. The more and more we hear, the more and more we read, it attracts us towards Krishna. Shiva Purana attracts us towards Shiva, and so forth and so forth. So he also understood that the power of bhakti also is very important. Not everybody is ready for knowledge, to understand Brahma Sutras, to understand Bhagavad Gita. So here also Krishna is emphasizing about this bhakti also. So when bhakti is in karma, when you have devotion for God and do all your duties with that bhakti for God, what does karma become? Karma Yoga. When you have bhakti and with that bhakti you pray to God, what does upasana become? Upasana yoga. When you have bhakti and love and devotion for God and you study the scriptures, what does jnana become? Jnana yoga. The yoga is there only because of the bhakti. Otherwise you are just worshipping blindly, worshipping without any love. You are doing your actions, your duty without any love. Karma just remains karma, upasana remains upasana, jnana remains jnana. So understand the power of bhakti. So now we come to verse 15. Therefore, why is it that people don't come to bhakti? Why is it that people do not also worship God? He will explain to us in verse 15. Okay. Now, although bhakti, as we have understood, is the remedy, however, Krishna points out in verse 15 that many people do not take refuge in this bhakti sadhana. And why? One of the main important reasons is because there is lack of punyam also. Punyam also from our past janma plays a very big role in how much we are also attracted to God in this life itself also. So, punya janma purva. Purva means a past janma, purva janma punyam. The punyam that you have accumulated in the past lives is not sufficient enough for you to take birth in the right atmosphere also. That is also one of the reasons also. Right? The type of parents you have. So, good are those parents who take their children for Bal Vikas classes, who expose them. So the child has got that purva janma punyam that has caused the child to be born in such a right environment to have access for this knowledge right from the very birth itself. So you're born in a family, if you don't have that purva janma punyam, you will be born in a family which is only interested in materialistic growth only. So there's no balance of spiritual growth. Right? Now, where emphasis is only for artha and kama. Right? We have to understand this. Now, in Saundarya Lahari, there's one text written by Shankara. He writes this very beautifully. He says that we cannot come to the worship of Lord if we don't have this purva janma karma with us. The very fact that we have this inclination to worship God, to love God, to go to temples, etc., has got a very strong driving force from our past karmas also. So he mentions this also very clearly, that to do prostrations to Lord, to sing hymns to Lord, there has got to be a lot of purva janma karma. Now first of all, you must have enough of purva janma karma for what? The first thing. To be born as a human being first. That is your first problem. If you don't have enough that, you don't even get born as a human, that also you have a big problem there. So understand this very important fact which Shankara also highlighted in Viveka Chudamani, which he said three things in life are the most difficult to obtain. One is human birth, the grace of a living guru, and desire for moksha. So just to get that human birth, first of all you must have sufficient punyam to get the human birth. Then after getting human birth, you must have sufficient punyam for what? For having the right culture and environment so that you can progress spiritually also. So these two things are very important factors. So here Krishna says, he calls those people duskritino. He uses a very harsh word of these type of people. Duskritino are people who have only desires for kama and artha. That is the main purpose of their life, to live for pleasures and possessions, kama and artha. Duskritino. Now understand this. The word duskritino appears in the first line, verse 15. Namam duskritino mudaha. Not only he calls them duskritino, he calls them mudaha also. D-U-S, the third word there, the first line. Namam duskritino mudaha. So duskritino means evil people. In the next verse, he will call the good people as sukritino to differentiate. So now he's first going to give us the bad news. And then verse 16 you get the good news. So then you have to decide where you fall under. So duskritino are those who have sufficient punyam to be born as human beings, but they don't have sufficient punyam to come to scriptures, to come to God. So they are born as human beings, but they only pursue karma and artha. So what type of life do they lead? He says here, look at the third line. Mayaya aprahata jnanaha. Aprahata means they are deprived of what? Jnana. They are deprived of wisdom. They are deluded by maya. They are running after this apara prakriti. They have got a total delusion. They are devoid of this wisdom, which keeps them busy in the pursuit of artha and kama. They have no time for spiritual matters. And when do they really come to spirituality? In distress. When they have certain problems, then they think of God. So they turn towards spirituality when they have bitter experiences. And on top of that, not only calling them duskritino, he says they are also mudaha. Mudaha, as we understood earlier, is deluded people. Why do we call them deluded? Because of misplaced seeking. Seeking permanence from the impermanent. Seeking security from the insecure. Seeking happiness from the temporary. That is what we call delusion. That's what the scriptures call delusion. The very cause, misplaced seeking is the very cause of our misery. And devoid of any wisdom to discriminate what leads to good, what leads to evil. So this power of discrimination is a very important thing. Because when we lack this, that is where we lose our balance, our direction in life. We pursue the things what we think are actually wrong, but we consider them to be right. In chapter 18, Krishna will call this as a tamasic intellect, the totally upside down intellect. What is good, they consider as bad. What is bad, they consider as good. And thus, they have misplaced seeking. So, they are overpowered by greed and desire. And they seek their happiness in the wrong direction. So, now, we can see, in fact, a whole explanation of this kind of demoniac people. In chapter 16, Krishna gives a very beautiful elaboration of the characteristics of demoniac people. And when we say demoniac, does not mean that they walk around with two horns and one tail. So what do we mean by demoniac? What do we mean by demoniac? The type of qualities that are inherent, if you just look at chapter 16, verse number 15, page 285. It is not that these people are not religious, but chapter 16, verse 15, page 285. So just, there is just one verse. There are many verses there, but just look at that one verse. I am rich. This is how a demonic person speaks. I am rich. I have money. I am high born, high class society. Who else is like unto me? Who can compare to me? I shall perform sacrifice. It's not that these people are not religious. They perform yajna. They do havan yajna. But when they do havan yajna, what do? How do they perform havan yajna? Huh? Make sure all the VIPs are invited, press is invited, right? Elaborate food is served. People must talk about it, write about it, which he'll talk about in chapter 17. What is the sattvic, rajasic and tamasic way also to perform yajna? They give charity and what they say? Rejoice. Live and enjoy. Why think about tomorrow? So these are the nature of the demonic people who are just pursuing kama and artha. And thus, he says, he uses the word, coming back to this verse number 15, he calls them Nara Adama. Nara means human beings. But when the word Nara Adama is used, means they are the most vilest of human beings, the most lowest category of human beings, the meanest of all human beings. Why does he put them in the lowest category? Although they think they are great, but Krishna is saying they are the right at the bottom end of the ladder of human beings. Why is that? See, if you do enough of prayers to desire a human birth, you give charity, you do all the good things, that punyam you have enough to get a human birth. But that doesn't give you the wisdom. That wisdom only comes through knowledge. So you do all that. That is called dharma, kama, artha, moksha. You forget moksha, you pursue kama and artha, and you do enough of dharma. Do charity, do seva, do everything, but with the purpose of attaining human birth or attaining higher birth. You will get that. But that doesn't give you that power of discrimination. So, why does he call them Nara Adhama? Because this human life has been given to us to achieve the possibility of the highest goal, that is moksha. But these people waste the entire opportunity of this one human birth to pursue kama and artha. So you may say, so what? So what's wrong? Anything wrong? Huh? We do not know where the next rebirth will, whether we will get this opportunity for another human birth, when we will get, we do not know. Because if the only thing you are interested in this life is to pursue food, water, drink, sleep and so forth, then you may not require a human birth again. You can enjoy it in any other animal form also. You can sleep the whole day. So, Nara Adama, that's why he calls it. They waste this precious human life to accomplish the wrong goals in life. And then, it's not enough, on top of them, he calls them Asuram Bhavam Ashrita. They assume, Ashrita means they assume what? Bhavam, the very nature of what? Asuras. They become very demoniac in nature. Now, why does that happen? Why do these people who are already the lowest of human beings, but they on top of that become demoniac in nature? Because when we are never satisfied, if we cannot satisfy these desires, the desires keep on multiplying and multiplying and multiplying. The mind has the capacity to multiply your desires faster than your physical body has the capacity to satisfy, isn't it? Right? So your mind keeps on multiplying the type of desires. You try to keep up with the desires. What happens? Then what happens? Then what happens? Then we take shortcuts, right? Then we do corruption. That's when all the crimes come in. Because why? We want to satisfy the demands as quick as possible. When we cannot do it legitimately, we are outpaced by our demands, then we try to find all kinds of shortcuts. So that's why he calls. Yes?
So, earlier you said that
due to some of our punyam reasons why we have been born in that situation, so we're not exposed to a family or surrounding where you can get the jhana. So is it our fault that we are in that demonic level? Because you don't have the exposure to meet a guru like yourself or come for class and things like that. So how can you get out of that mess?
Chapter 2, verse 47. What is chapter 2, verse 47? What is chapter 2, verse 47? Karma eva adhikaraste. Your right is to put in action. Number 1. That means we have power of self-will. So, yes, faith does play a role in our present life because of the karmas we brought forward. We have certain disadvantage in this present life. But we must not forget that we as human beings have the capacity to raise ourselves to a higher goal. Number 1. Number 2, chapter 6 verses 5 and 6. He says, lift yourself by yourself. Yourself is your friend. Yourself also can be your enemy. Who is the self?
Mine.
Use your physical body for the good things, for doing the right things. Use your mind to think of right things. Use your intellect to get the right knowledge. Then your mind, your intellect, your body becomes your friend. If you use your physical body to do the wrong things, use your mind to think the wrong things, gain the wrong knowledge, your same body, your same mind, your same intellect becomes your worst enemy. So understand, seek the grace of God. Yes, we have certain disadvantages, but that doesn't mean we have to give up. Self-effort is one of the most important gifts we have been given by God. So we have to initiate that self-effort. So yes, we do find, what is the definition of a saint? What is the definition of a saint?
Someone who
was a past sinner. Isn't it? A saint was a sinner in the past. He did not automatically become a saint. From somewhere in his life, he decided he wanted to make a change. One very good example is the one who wrote the Ramayana, Valmiki. He was a bandit, he was a robber. Until he was fortunate enough to meet Narada, who changed his life. And then from a highway robber, he became a saint. And there are many examples given in our scriptures also. So we have that. We must not negate the very important capacity of self-will. Okay? So, Asuram, when you cannot fulfill your desires through legitimate means, therefore, there are this pressure of desires, you have to violate Dharma. Once you violate Dharma, you are just nothing but a Asura, a demon. Okay? And the beauty about this is violating Dharma is very interesting. Initially, when you violate Dharma, what happens? You do something wrong. Then what happens? This time, okay lah, no. Conscience pricks you a bit. I shouldn't have done it, but okay, I got away with it. Then what happens? Do it again. You say, shouldn't have done it again. Then again you do it. Then what happens? So okay lah, everybody is doing it lah, so what? Isn't it? So your conscience initially pricks you, but the more and more you keep on violating Dharma, eventually your conscience gets weaker. When conscience here, I don't mean Atman, I mean your thinking power, your intellect gets weaker and weaker, and ultimately you start to justify what you're doing wrong is right. That is the danger. And thus, right. It is mechanical. It's become mechanical actually. It's mechanical bhakti because your desires are still at the very base level. You are not moving on to higher desires, higher goals in life. So until you move on to the higher goals, you have value and you appreciate those higher goals, that is only when you will change. But until you don't come to appreciate that higher goal, you will always be stuck in this, pursuing the same, what you call, worldly goals of life. So, in fact, temples have got to be the center for spreading knowledge. But unfortunately, they've just stuck to one aspect of the religion and neglected the other aspect of our religion. So we have, it's not to say we should not go to temple. Yes, by all means, please go to temple, priest may pray and all that, but at the same time, develop your knowledge. Yeah, nothing wrong. Yeah, it's fine. See, everybody has their own worries, their own problems. There's nothing wrong. But after that, we should move on. We should not remain where we are. It's just like we go to standard 1, standard 6, then after 20 years, we are still in standard 6. We have not moved on. That's our problem. Okay. So the conscience gets weaker and weaker, and you start to justify. So Krishna says they become the very nature of asuras. And thus they do adharma. Na prapadyate. These are the very people who don't take refuge in me, who don't worship me, who don't seek me. So they lack, because of their delusion, they lack discrimination, they get carried away with karma and artha, and thus he calls them duskriti noho. And the next verse, he will talk about the sukriti noho. So let's look at the other type of people now, which also fall into four categories of people. So although sukriti noho means virtuous people, there are virtuous people who do worship God, who do pray to God, but Krishna says they fall into four categories. So they also have punyam, they also turn towards God, and although they do not know at the initial stage the higher nature of God, so that's why the scriptures present to us the visible, the apara prakriti or the lower nature of God to worship. And that's why we have all these various Ishta Devatas which we can worship. So here Krishna says now in verse 16, Janaha, Janaha means people who are Sukriti Noho, to differentiate from the earlier verse who are Duskriti Noho. So they are virtuous people, they are devotees of God, and they can be classified into Chatur Vida. Chatur means four, Vida means classes. So these virtuous people who worship me can be classified into four classes based on what? Based on their motive. Okay, what is the first class of the devotee? He calls as the Artha. If you look at the third line, Artha, that is the first class of devotee. When I say first class means not the highest, because this devotee is called the devotee in distress. The first type of devotee who, when face, or you can give another name to this devotee called a crisis bhakta. Every time face crisis in the life, then they become a devotee of God. Now, this is what we call sakama bhakti. Kama means desire. Sakama means with desire. So our worship has got a motive, a desire behind it. And again, nothing wrong. Because Krishna is calling all these people what? Sukriti no. They are virtuous people. Because when they have a problem, at least they think of God. So it is not wrong to start, and majority of devotees do start this way. Even Arjuna also, what was the title of the first chapter? Arjuna Vishada Yoga. He also fell into a state of despondency, into a state of sorrow. Then he turned towards God. So there's nothing wrong also, right? So many examples also are given in Puranas. We have seen how when Draupadi was being disrobed, she also at the point of distress surrendered to God. So these are not wrong. They prayed to God and God came to save them. We have stories of Prahlad who was saved by Narasimha, right? Okay. And there's Draupadi, etc. So first type of devotee who is the what we call Artha in distress. Second type of devotee, a bit different, called the Arthati. In the third line you see Artho, and at the end you see there Arthati. Arthati is seeker of wealth, wants to attain something. The first type was what? Wants something to be removed. This type wants to get something, wants to acquire something, either a business contract. So we can call them business bhaktas. You know, I give you this, you give me this lot. And now we are more smarter. Now, you give me first, then only I give you. Be very sure. You give me first this contract, then I will donate so much of money. So we want to be very safe, you know, with God. So, now, So both these type of bhaktas, this is what earlier we discussed called the manda bhakta, the very initial stage of bhakti, where we go to God, either we seek to remove something or we seek to acquire something. Now, again, they are not interested in God. God is not their ultimate goal here. But they use God to get what they are interested. So now, who do you love more? Do you love the end more or do you love God more? No, I don't answer that. Of course, you love the end more. As when? Now, why we say this person loves the end more? Huh? When the end is achieved? Bye-bye, God. Right? So, the love is for the end, to achieve the end. Again, as I will stress, he calls them Sukritino, nothing wrong. When you are in distress, yes, by all means, he says, come to me. You want something, come to me. You are Sukritino, you are a virtuous person. Then we have the third type of devotee, which is the Jignyashur. Jignyashur is one who is seeking knowledge. He is only interested in knowledge of God and attaining God, where God is the goal of life itself. This is what we call the Madhyama, the middle level bhakta, or Nishkama bhakta. Kama means desire, Nishkama means devoid of any desire, meaning devoid of any selfish or worldly desires. Nishkama. And then we come to the fourth type of devotee here, which Krishna identifies in the fourth line as the Jnani, a man of knowledge. The bhakta who has discovered, what do we mean by man of knowledge? That the Lord is never away from me. The Uttama Bhakta, the one who considers him and God to be one. So God is neither the means nor the end, but God is me, myself. All four devotees, bhaktas, are approved by Krishna and they are all virtuous. They are all known as Sukritino. Okay? Now we will come back again next week and look at this verse. Discuss it and then move on to other verses. Any questions at this stage?